looking at what drumming does to various cultures, and it's just inbred in us. It's something that we need to do. And on, there's a guy at the Circle right now who lost his wife a short time ago, and it helps keep him glued. Help us all.
KTRT and Blue Star Coffee Roasters proudly present Curious Lightning. I'm your host, Dakota Clearwater Lacroix. This episode, we'll call it The Glue.
Something, and all of a sudden 10 years goes by.
There are thousands of self-help books and career coaches out there all telling us more or less the same thing. Connections matter. Whether it's reconnecting with our pets, our childhood self, our friends, you name it. Social networking is there. It is all there for us. But is there a certain kind of adhesive that connects us together?
But I think the drumming, if we drum, we get into that core, and you really do feel it in yourself. Sooner or later, there is a syncopation that happens, and you just kind of wait for it, and then you feel the syncopation, and then you're in it. I mean, it isn't the most sophisticated drumming in the world, but it certainly does seem to suffice for the people who join. You leave there, and you don't carry as much crap with you. It's kind of like it just washes off of you. You walk away smiling, going, what the hell? Just beat on a drum for a while. You know, maybe it's only a Tuesday, but at least wise I have a Tuesday. And you kept us awake with a posture, sharing different heartbeats in one life. I had a degree in recreation and outdoor education, and I used to just do that all the time, plan events, and I have not been able to stop.
I had a friend tell me a story about a wiffle ball league that they used to have in their backyard. This just wasn't any wiffle ball league. They had announcers perched in the trees giving the play-by-play. They had stats. They took wiffle ball seriously. So again, that person ended up going on to get a leisure studies degree, just like Doug.
My son is... I did a lot of events with him when he was a kid. I don't think he really realized how amazing some of them were, but it was...
Do you recall any?
Yeah. I don't know how you could say how I would remember.
Oh.
Of course, yeah.
Like, what's an event that stuck out in your childhood that you
camping a 50-mile loop through the... Or hiking a 50-mile loop through the Cascades. River rafting trips where people break their arms and legs, and we were the only ones that stayed in the boat out of 6 boats with 50 people.
that for you.
So a particular place can bring us together, right? A particular spot in the world, drawn to nature, perhaps. Or the cultural events of a city. Or even a tragedy such as 9/11 can collectively bring us together.
I'm always looking forward to what's going to happen. And I look forward to it. Then the day comes that there it is. And then you get to talk about it for the rest of your life. But another event is coming. And that helps life. It just helps things to make it okay.
But what about the smaller connections in life? Where did those come from? Is that somewhere in our subconscious that we're just going to connect, but we don't necessarily know why until it happens? Are we like these little radio stations transmitting our own playlist of life in hopes of somebody else picking it up?
Hello? I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat, a 6 foot baller. I wish I was like 6 foot nine so I could get.
Yeah, my little sister is taller than me, and it drives me crazy. Okay, it was my lifelong goal to make it to 5'7", and I hit 5'6¾".
That's about what Kelsey is, I think.
Yeah, and it's definitely my stopping point. I kept, like, Dennis Rodman grew 6 inches in high school, so I thought maybe I'd get at least that quarter inch, but no.
That person talking right there, that's Melanie Merz. She's a producer and writer on Curious Lightning, and she's going to be joining me here on the show. So in that little clip I just played for you with Melanie, she said she always wanted to be 5'7". On every driver's license I've ever had, they all read 5'7". But the truth is, I'm really 5'6¾". So we have that in common, right? That's our connection. It's not a big one, but is that all it takes? Just that little connection to get us going? To set off a conversation? To set off a relationship? A friendship? I mean, I can't be alone in this, right? We all must be looking, knowingly or unknowingly, for these connections. This little height issue, that's the beginning of our glue, isn't it?
Oh, she can't wait for what I can give. She knows what I am, but she won't believe me. Is it all okay? Will I come off the like this? I can't believe it. It's always like this, 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 like this.
I have a friend who went through it. Whenever you sign up for those dating sites, you have to answer a survey of hundreds of questions. I have a friend who two different dating sites rejected because he just, his mind is all over the place. His values and his priorities and...
Beep, beep. Rejected.
Exactly.
Incompatible.
They told him that they didn't feel they could make a match for him because his ideas were so all over the place. They weren't confident that they could put him with someone else and there would be a connection.
So that's an algorithm.
Yeah, their statistics said no. Like he met somebody, he was a whirlwind, he's happily married now, but their computer program thought it wasn't going to happen.
Interesting.
Happens all the time. You strike up a conversation at the grocery store, at a party, and you realize that the two of you, this new acquaintance and yourself, are connected by some mutual friend. one of you exclaims, "Oh, it's a small world." And some scientists started to wonder, how many mutual friends would it take to connect any two randomly selected people? In the 1960s, the social psychologist Stanley Milgram decided to test what had become known as the small world theory. Milgram gave a letter addressed to a stockbroker friend of his in Boston to 300 individuals in Omaha, Nebraska. The instruction to all these Nebraskans was to send the letter to a personal acquaintance, who would then send it on to another personal acquaintance, hoping to get this letter closer to the stockbroker and to see how many people it took for the letter to arrive. In the end, 60 letters made it to the stockbroker, or about 20%. And on average, each of these successfully delivered letters passed through 6 individuals. This is where the phrase, the 6 degrees of separation, comes from. You know, Milgram's methodology wasn't exactly scientifically sound, but it was enough for people to begin to see how connected we really are. The man you're about to hear is Duncan Watts. He's a statistician and sociologist who wrote the book The Six Degrees of Separation, The Science of a Connected Age.
I did my graduate work at Cornell with Steve Strogatz in engineering, and we sort of got interested in networks kind of generically, and we heard about this phenomenon that was sort of, you know, part social science, part folklore, and we weren't really sure which one it was, and so we started to think about how we could model networks mathematically. Did an experiment a few years ago where we replicated Milgram's early experiment, except rather than using physical packets, we used electronic messages, and we did everything through a website. And so we were able to run the, you know, more or less the same experiment, but on a global scale with, you know, tens of thousands of people and thousands of message chains and in multiple different targets all around the world. And, you know, I won't go into the details, but Milgram was basically right, which is actually quite remarkable given the sort of limitations that he had on his methodology. So it does seem like, you know, for what it's worth, that everybody in the world is sort of more or less connected to everyone else in just a few steps.
Think about this. A line can be drawn between any two people in the world by passing through merely 6 human hubs. There are 6 billion of us on this planet. But when you realize that we're connected through 6 degrees of separation, it makes everybody seem so much closer.
You, but I kind of know you. Somebody who knew someone who met somebody through someone whose sister was a cousin, Kevin Bacon.
That 6th person is way far off. It's a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend. The odds that I'm going to interact with this person are fairly minimal.
Separation between you and me and Kevin Bacon.
But still, instead of them being some complete stranger, I'm connected. It's not like a great 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 grandparent, but it's a similar idea. These people are tied to us, and we think of this whole world as being some great unknown, this grand, there's such an expanse, but really, when it comes down to it, we are connected, and that is so crazy. Like, things happening on the other side of the world we can ignore and not pay attention to, but it's not that far away.
Suddenly, the world doesn't feel so big. We are connected. 6 degrees. There's drinking games with Kevin Bacon and, of course, Milgram's experiment. But what if you wanted to find solitude? Or rather, solitude was part of the byproduct of the thing you do.
What was it that interested you about it? Because it's definitely unique.
Yeah, well, the solitude was mainly it, and then the hike in and just the idea of you know, having to live alone with no electricity, no running water, things of that nature, all those things that make it what it is, pretty much.
myself believe that planet Earth turns slowly.
Do they prepare you for that solitude?
When I was, most of the training I received was to be a type 2 wildland firefighter, and it doesn't really, they just hit on, you know, basically what a lookout is and what they do, but, you know, most of those things, a lot of the lookouts are just not really manned anymore because of the use of satellites and so forth, but that one in particular is kind of a historic building.
Daniel's just not manning any particular fire tower. This is Desolation Peak. That very same Desolation Peak that Jack Kerouac spent 63 days in and immortalized in some of his novels such as Dharma Bums and The Desolation Angels.
So, like on a basic day, like, were you bored or were you, did you feel like you were waiting for something, or what was kind of your thought process as you were there?
I kind of developed a little schedule for myself, how I would do things. I would wake up in the morning, switch my radio on, wash my face, just kind of wipe my body down a little bit, shave, you know, these things, call myself into service later in the morning, eat something, clean the lookout, you know, sweep the lookout, and then take a weather and check the humidity, check to see which way wind was coming from, just simple things like that.
And so you did that cycle throughout the day just until it was time to clock off?
I would do that 3 times a day. Usually I would do it a few minutes before I called in to the fire dispatch. That way if they asked, I would already have it. I wouldn't have to put them on hold, go back outside like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so those were good. Those were also good mile markers throughout the day, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, in 20 minutes it's going to be time to go check the weather, and then after that, it's going to be time to call in, and that means time for lunch, like that.
A year earlier, Melanie actually climbed the 6,000-foot peak and met Daniel in person.
After there was so much waiting and watching, did you find yourself hoping that something would happen?
I never wanted anyone to be in danger, but yeah, to be honest, I a couple of times I thought, well, if I just got the opportunity to call in a smoke.
So Daniel's day would go from these little mundane events, gluing his hours and days together, to suddenly getting what he wished for.
And then there's a lightning stool up there with glass insulators on it, and sometimes you have to crouch down on that stool when the lightning gets real active up there. And then your bed, I can't imagine the lightning that I, you know, saw and heard when I was up there, I can't imagine anyone sleeping through, but there's a bed in all the lookouts, and it's actually designed out of rope rather than having metal springs in the mattress. It's intertwined rope and wood for a mattress spring. You got so used to the noises and the sounds up there that you could tell a human voice coming, you know, sometimes up to 10, 20 minutes before they would ever reach the lookout. You could hear them, and you were just kind of wanting for those voices and stuff like that. You know, I sought out looking for solitude in that job, and but after a while, visitors became the best part of the day, because then you have someone to talk to and bounce thoughts off of and talk to about ideas and just share the view with, actually.
Unless you're perched all alone on some far-off mountaintop, you usually have the opportunity every day to connect with someone. Could be that lady in the produce aisle, the guy sitting across from you at the bakery, or the woman who has a P.O. box right next to yours that you've never taken the time to talk to. Like, who knows how these people could impact your life if only you had the chance to connect instead of continuing to just pass by each other over the course of your day. impact these people could have on your life, no matter how big or small, unless you actually have the chance to connect and to see what kind of energy passes between you. Craigslist is all about connecting people. Landlords, renters, buyers, sellers, employers, people desperately seeking employment. Also on Craigslist, there's a section called Missed Connections. It's this page where people post about the missed encounters they had, where they met someone, they saw somebody, but they didn't make a connection. There was nothing beyond some passing moment. And this Missed Connections page on Craigslist gives people the chance to reach out to those strangers in hopes of finding that.
We ran into each other a few times in the Walmart when you were looking for some scrub pads to clean your truck tires. I was a bit preoccupied and also rusty on the fine art of talking to a woman. I usually just assume a nice-looking lady is already in a relationship, but if by chance you are not, and would be interested in meeting formally, just to see what's up sort of thing, I will be in Walmart May 19th at about the same time of day. Maybe we could run into each other again if you are at all interested. I've kind of got you stuck in my mind, so I thought I would at least give this list thing a try.
Something in everybody that is hoping that they will be that missed stranger, because we all want connection. We're all searching for a little something. We want to be wanted.
Bus driver tonight. You picked me up at Annie and dropped me off at 46th. You are cute.
Magnolia lady whose dog eat her cell phone. Seattle to Phoenix. I was in the middle and you were on the aisle on May 13th. Seattle to Phoenix. I should have taken your friend's name in the property management business, but I was shy. I was on my way to Phoenix to end my relationship and not in the mood to get acquainted as I should have been. I loved your spunk amongst other things. Dave.
And so you never know who's going to leave some sort of lasting impression. Ball rolling, if you're not just thrown together, trapped in an elevator, you need some incentive. It's so easy to just walk by or to just sip your coffee without exerting that little bit of effort to, or huge effort, depending on your personality. Working in customer service is the perfect place to practice because you have to put yourself out there. This person is coming into you.
Hit it!
Brittany is a barista, and she's worked in customer service for a long time.
One of them was applying for Starbucks and was asking me for my opinion, and because I worked there for 3.5 years. So they wanted to know what they should say, how they should dress. You know, they're asking me, what does Starbucks want?
This is her reiterating a conversation she had with a young cousin of hers who was looking to get into customer service for the first time.
So we were talking about it, and they're like, well, how do you talk to people? Like, how do you get more information out of them? Or like, what if there's an awkward silence? I'm like, I always work drive-thru. So it's like, you look in their car, and very nonchalantly talk about something they have or something. I don't know. You comment on a necklace they're wearing. But the example I gave them is, okay, they have a dog in the backseat of their car. Having animals is the easiest way to talk to somebody. But they're like, well, how does that spark conversation? You know, this girl's like 17, hasn't had a job before. And I was like, okay, well, you ask what the dog's name is, ask what the breed is. She's like, okay, well, that's simple. I'm like, and then, you know, if the conversation is dying down from there, you ask, like, or you make up some BS story about how you have a dog, too. And, you know, where are your favorite places to take your dog walking? Or, you know, I really like this place. And when they give you a place, normally it's near their house. So then you get to start and like, oh, that neighborhood is really wonderful. Like, do you spend a lot of time there? Yes. Oh, well, blah, blah, blah. Or I actually live in that neighborhood. Oh, really? How long have you lived there? You know, what brought you to that area? I've actually lived here my whole life. Oh, so you went to so-and-so school. Yeah, I did. And blah, blah, blah. It just carries on. And that's what's great about working. Customer service is you learn how to do that. Or commenting on a ring. Oh, I got it from Target. Oh, Target is such a wonderful store. Did you see that they had this on sale? Oh, yeah, I totally did in the newsletter.
Conversations over the cash register don't get too profound, but it's the beginning of something, and most customers do come back time and time again. Just like you run into the same people over and over again at the grocery store or at school when you're picking your child up. You have the opportunity in any community to run into the same people, and whether or not you're doing it intentionally, you are getting to know them a little bit better each time if you're extending that energy and that effort.
Just the fact alone that they can broaden your horizons just by a conversation you have with somebody else. That, I mean, what either they've been through or how they tell it or just what their overall, like, aura is. It's just, it can be uplifting and motivating. And some people can just be like, I don't know, they kind of almost make you want to kick yourself in the pants because it's like, well, what the hell have I been doing? But it is kind of, customer service has its downsides, like everything, just because you have to deal with people that aren't very pleasing. But at the same time, you can meet some of the most, like, remarkable people that you could ever come across. They kind of make it worth it.
How many years you been doing this?
About 40. Well, I don't really care for the highway, but yep. Once we get off, it's a lot better. Yeah. Back off, Jennifer. Jennifer, move. They'll come down. There they go.
So there I was, just after sunrise, walking with hundreds of cows down the middle of the highway. A day earlier, I had heard about this cattle drive. And something inside of me was called to go. And I don't know what it was. Maybe it was the movie City Slickers, where the meaning of life was going to be discovered by being out on the range. And I would discover that one thing that would just make sense of it all for me. But it was never that grand. Seeing these cattle drivers who had been driving cattle for over 40 years doing the thing they do, and loving it? That was it. That was simply it. They created the glue by doing the thing that they loved.
Oh, look, she's got a camera peeking out her door, but she won't come out. In a row.
Now, why not transport them the old, you know, like...
In trucks?
Yeah, yeah.
Just not enough trucks, and then it gets stressful on the calves. They get separated from their mothers, and... Some of these cows are really old, and they've been doing this for 12 years, and they know where they're going. So it's, plus it's tradition.
And in the midst of all this chaos, I suppose that's when the happy little accidents occur.
Dum-da-da-dum-da-da-dum-da-da-da-da-da. something else. You know, I've seen that on movies and on television all my life, but I've never been in the middle of a cattle drive. My God, that was something else. Yeah, I'm a retired elementary teacher, you know, and to live a little something of this wonderful cow country here, and reach out and touch one, that was something else. When I get back, I'll be telling my kids, you'll never guess what happened to us. We were in the middle of a real cattle drive.
Thank you for joining me on this audio journey of Curious Lightning. And a very special thanks to the wide-eyed curiosity of Melanie Merz, whose contributions made this show possible. I'm your host, Dakota Clearwater Lacroix. Find us on the web at www.curiouslightning.com, and we'll see you next time.
Commentary on the introduction, I think it sounds fantastic. Yeah, great job. I had a really long day, and I'm just now getting home and able to sit down and start working on it. So I am going to try and record some things. I haven't pulled my recorder out of the box yet, but I'm all psyched up. Thank you. Did a good job. By the way, I've never lied about my height, so I'm not so stoked on that comparison, but whatever, for the sake of the flow of the show. But yeah. Call
when you have the chance, or we'll talk. We'll talk
tomorrow. Bye.
Wednesday, 8:04 p.m. End of messages.